Internet Talk Radio. Planet Earth, this is TalkZone.com. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show, sponsored by Nutrisource, a super premium dog food company. I'm speaking to Karen Sussman, the president of International Society for the Protection of Mustangs and Burros, and we're talking about wild horses that exist in our country. They were always here, and right now we're talking about some of their behavior and their characteristics. If you'd like to see photographs of the animals, then click the purple Look While You Listen button you see inside today's July 9th episode page, or if you're on the Talk Zone Wild About Pets homepage, you can also click the purple Look While You Listen button. That'll get you to my website. Then you click Look While You Listen, and then you'll see the name of our show, The Story of America's Wild Horses, and then you can click that to get to the photos. We also have our phone lines that are open. You can call in and ask Karen Sussman a question about wild horses. That's 888-463-6748, or you can write me at susan@wildaboutpets.net. We are looking at these two stallions fighting, and Karen, you mentioned you have a cute story about these horses.
Right. In fact, this was a bit of an older photo, maybe about 4 years ago or five, and the horse on the left, the black horse, they're both very old, by the way, because these horses came to me in 1999, and they were already older to begin with. But the black one ended up losing a lot of weight, and I knew he would not go through the winter, so we captured him. And his mare was left there, although, you know, we had hoped that another stud would take her. And so for a whole winter and most of the spring, nobody had taken her. So what we're able to do is to be able to capture her then, and we reunited them, and now this they have a foal.
Ah, okay.
So it's really cool, and they're in a rather large corral, and they're just enjoying each other's company once again, but it was so exciting just to see her reunite with him again, and of course, he is on special feed because he is older. He's on senior feed. We feed all of our older horses that, and it gives them those extra years.
I see. So there are four herds, I understand, that you're caring for, and I have most of the photos from three of them. Going back up to photograph number 11, it shows a wonderful assortment of a lot of the Gila herd.
Right.
And then, you know, the pictures following in order show some of them. And then I switch to the White Sands herd. Picture number 16, is this a bit of the family grouping? Is this like a little, I don't know if this is a colt or a foal and mom. What do we see here? We've got two, it looks like two adults and one cute little one.
Right. That is, her name is Candy Cane, and those are her two foals. One is yearling and one is her newer foal. And she is married to Jedi. I'll use humanistic terms.
Sure.
Jedi is not in the picture there, but Jedi is a very good husband, takes very good care of her. And now both of these foals are weaned, and so I'm assuming that she'll probably foal again this year, but they don't do every year. They don't foal, but anyway, she's a neat gal, and we have all of her lineage down from her mother, whose name is Magpie, who's on our site, and Magpie was born. Oh, let's see, she was probably a year old whenever we received her. No, she was born in the year 2000, so. Magpie, her mother, is already 10 years old.
Okay, now my understanding is that, of course, you have named these horses, but these are still wild animals who are roaming and living free, and it's just that they're on protected land, and you are helping care for them as
right.
They go about their wild life.
I name them. A lot of people don't name wildlife. Mm-hmm. They think that it interferes with them being wild, but I name them because I have to know who they are for lineage,
sure.
And I have to... You know, I every year I determine the band structures, and learning is that the band structures are the are the same in the White Sands. We're looking at White Sands, photo number 16. They came out of Boise Range, New Mexico. And anyway, they are definitely the oldest horses that we have and probably behaviorally the most beautiful horses that we have because they hadn't been gathered in decades of time. And that is critical to the social structures of wild horses.
And so if there are roundups and if there are very well established social structures amongst the horses, when horses are taken out, doesn't that destroy a lot of the social hierarchy?
It does. It is devastating to the structures to the point where I believe that it is causing some really poor behaviors on public lands. And I've noticed that by getting a third herd, the catnips, who had been completely almost eliminated at a time, and then they go in again and they try to eliminate the horses. So I've been able to really just by accident have two of the most behaviorally healthy herds, the Gilas and the White Sands, and then to get a third herd, it took me honestly, Susan, 2 years to 3 years to determine what really was going on there and why things were happening there that were different than my two normal herds. And in my normal herds, I don't really have a big foal die-off. The stallions protect the mares, and it is a critical function of a stallion is to be very protective and to keep his fillies in the van until they're 4 years of age. I haven't noticed that on the catnip herd, and that is what is so distressing to me. And then furthermore, I've noticed that the catnip herd had increased in size much faster than the White Sands or the Gila herd. And the Gila herd and the White Sands are increasing at maybe 10 to 12% every year, whereas the catnips were increasing between up to 30%. And so, of course, I did contracept them just to be on the safe side so I could continue with them. But for the first 2 years, this is what happened. I had over 30 foals born to 45 mares.
Wow.
And so what our behavioral studies are showing is that the increase in the fertility rates, what the BLM calls fertility rates, I call them recruitment, the number of horses coming into the herd, the increase is actually caused by the destruction of the harems. Oh. And when you destroy the family structures and the educational system that has been in place for eons of time on public lands, I mean, they've been running 500 years, then you really are, not only are they threatening wild horses by removal, but they're threatening their entire existence by destroying their social makeup and their educational program.
Right, sure. There's a photograph I have here. It's number 9 of a cowboy chasing and roping some of the wild Mustangs. I understand that originally this is the way it was done, and then after that, people used to chase them in helicopters. Is that still occurring, Karen, that the helicopters are rounding them up?
Oh, yes. And you know, Velma, our Wild Horse Annie did not want that to happen. There was a Wild Horse Annie law which stopped the helicopters. And then,
right, I thought so.
One of the amendments to the act, basically what they did was allow helicopter removals because they weren't able to catch them on horseback. You cannot have a horse, a domestic horse, compete with a wild horse for their stamina and their ability to stay away from them. So they started helicopter gathers. What we're advocating now is to do bait trapping or water trapping where you trap the entire band and then remove the animals that you want to remove out of that particular band. Because by doing the helicopter roundups, they separate the studs from the mares, and that just truly, they never band up the same, even though they're returned back to the, you know, to their homeland. The stallions don't ever band up with their mares. They do at some point, but they never have the same structure. And the younger studs take over. So imagine over 20 years where younger stallions are in charge. To me, it's an analogy as if you took the Harvard professor out and you're putting eighth graders in charge.
Right.
You cannot have a really good educational system. And so what we're seeing on the dysfunctional herd or the catnip herd, we're seeing stallions rogue stallions, or what we call the bachelors, and they have their own harems, bachelor harems. We see the bachelors are breeding 1- and 2-year-old fillies. And in our two other herds, those fillies don't even leave their mother and father until they're 4 years of age. And a harem stallion doesn't even become a stallion, a harem stallion, until he is 10. So it is like you have to have this wisdom before you even take over.
Right now, I know that in your conservation program that you're developing, part of it is that you are developing this whole plan for how one would manage herds of wild horses in a case where the humans are going to be managing them. So I suppose all the information that you have is going to be highly valuable to go into making sure that these horses can be conserved.
Well, that was our whole goal, was to develop a model management program for the government. In fact, every program that the BLM has been given to them by our organization. We even gave them the concept of the Adopt-a-Horse program, and they've adopted out over 200,000 wild horses and burros since 1976. But one thing they haven't done is to be able to manage effectively and to the advantage of the wild horse, the horses. And I'm hoping that they will accept our model management program. I've spoken with them, and I hope to have it done this summer to get to them. And we hope that maybe they'll change their concept in the way they handle wild horses.
Yes, and the BLM is the Bureau of Land Management. And my understanding, Karen, is they are the organization in charge of the protection of wild horses and burros.
Right.
Okay.
In fact, just an interesting tidbit on that. They are also the same agency that before they became the BLM, they were called the Grazing Service, and they were the ones that actually put contracts out to kill wild horses on public land. So the same agency that in the 30s were killing them is the agency that's in charge of them now.
Is there a little conflict of interest even within the organization on how to handle the horses?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at it, you certainly can see the culture has not changed in the management of wild horses. Just as I said, we have fewer horses now than we did in 1971 when the law said they were fast disappearing from the American scene. And so we have half the number now. So if we truly wanted to conserve and save wild horses, we would have at least the same number. And if not, you know, maybe even a little more.
And that's what you're still working for. And I understand, besides you spending many, many hours in your day caring for these horses, and I'll ask you a little bit about that, because, of course, we do have a photograph of you with one of the foals. You have had to get politically involved also. And I know we have a photograph of you, and I don't know where this was from. It's 10, where you're standing with a group of people. And then we also have the picture of you with the South Dakota's lieutenant governor.
Right.
So you have to probably wear many, many hats, don't you?
I do, Susan. And sometimes, you know, time is critical. And
yes,
of course, I have to measure what is probably the most important for my time at this point. And, you know, I've been so involved in all of my life in the protection of wild horses to the point of, you know, even facilitating a meeting with the law enforcement and the U.S. attorney in Arizona. We actually had the fines change from $2,000 to $100,000 per animal death if anybody happened to kill a wild horse or burro. But that came from just, you know, initiating the meeting and making sure that it went not only through the first federal district or through the Arizona federal district, but through every federal district in the United States. So we did all of those things, and everything that that has happened protection-wise, our organization has been a strong leader in doing this. I do believe that our conservation center is going to be the future of what we're going to learn about wild horses and what we can convey to the horses on public lands. I do believe that it's going to be on the leading edge. I don't think there is anybody in the United States who has 11 consecutive years of studying three herds intensely and documenting behaviors as we do here. So I think it's a valuable study, and we hope to be working with Princeton University. We're waiting to, we had a Princeton professor here. We're looking at what we can do to make a herd that is so has been so destroyed through the multiple gathers, and their educational system isn't such of the older and wiser horses. We're looking at how do we correct that now, because I think that's going to be the next critical step to save wild horses on public land.
Mm-hmm. And so after these horses are rounded up, they're just taken to holding pens, aren't they, as in photograph number 24. This shows one in Pyramid Lake, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
So the horses are just taken off the natural land and put in these pens, and these are all to become part of the adoption program?
Right, but we have about 36,000, I believe, now between 34 and 36,000 that they consider unadoptable, which is a term that we don't use, Susan. I believe that it's a improper term. I believe that BLM felt that five and under could be adopted easily, so anything over the age of five was not adoptable. But a horse is in the prime of life between the ages of, you know, 7 and 12. They just mature at five. And so it's sad that these horses will live out their lives without their families, you know, for the rest of their lives in these actually holding pastures. They're large pastures in the Midwest where they just stay and live out their lives till they're 20, 25 years old. And this is where the government, you know, had complained that it was so costly. But if they would never have gathered these horses in the first place, and if they would have done what they should have done, which is removal of livestock during harsh weather conditions, mm-hmm. drought, there's a regulation that they have that's called closure to livestock to protect the wild horses. And I think if I would be correct in saying that if they implemented it 10 times since 1971, that would be a lot.
Mm. Well, in this regard, Karen, is there something the public can do? Can we, I mean, are these horses completely not adoptable? If people said, I will adopt them, I will take them on, I will pay for them, can the public affect at all these horses that are considered unadoptable and are just going to be living their lives this way?
Well, it would be wonderful if we could find homes for all of these horses. It would be wonderful to take two horses, but they definitely would have to have an area to roam on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would be something that could be done. People don't have to really gentle them, so to speak, but they could be with them to the point. I have learned that with all of my horses that I bring in, if they're wild, I don't try to gentle them. I'm with them frequently, and they just want to come into your life. So some may take a year, some take 2 years, and but it's a matter of time, and if you're with them constantly, you know, they will assimilate to human beings.
Now let's define that term you used, Karen. What do you mean by gentling?
Well, just basically becoming domesticated to the point where they allow you to touch them.
Okay.
And so most people want to rush this process, and they're going to try to, the BLM sends a halter and a lead rope home with you, and then people try to tie them up. Everything you shouldn't do with a wild horse.
Because
The most that you want to do with any wild animal is to establish a relationship. That is critical. Relationships take time. They don't happen overnight, and they don't happen in 30 days.
Right.
A relationship, like any human relationship, takes a good year before. But the horses can, of course, they can determine who you are almost immediately. But for a human being, it takes us longer because as human species, we are not as honest as wild horses are.
Mm.
Wild horses are very honest, but we always have little agendas underneath, which people sometimes don't know who the real person is.
Right. Oh, isn't that true? When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about that human-horse bond. Stay tuned. We'll be back very soon.